Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at NewBalance.com. Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Kyle Boone is here with me, and as previously noted, in addition to normal episodes of the podcast, we are also regularly recording short episodes on various prospects in the 2020 NBA draft. We've already done LaMelo Ball, Obi Toppin, James Wiseman, Anthony Edwards, Denny Avdia, Onyeka Okongwu, Isaac Okoro, Cole Anthony, Sadiq Bey, Trey Jones, Tyrese Halliburton. If you missed any of them and you're interested, go find them. In fact, I tweeted a link to a Spotify playlist early on Monday that should make everything simple for you. So if you've missed any of them, you can find them all there. Anyway, for this episode, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to get back to the draft profiles next week, but today we're going to do an actual mock draft all the way through the end of the first round. 30 picks with Kyle Boone and I alternating picks. And since Kyle is technically my guest, I've decided to let him make the first pick. So Kyle Boone, let's just dive straight into it. The Minnesota Timberwolves are on the clock. You're in charge, so I'll turn things over to you. Please walk to the lectern and announce the first pick.
Well, I appreciate you letting me do the honors here. With the first pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Minnesota Timberwolves select LaMelo Ball. I'm going with LaMelo. I think he has the highest ceiling of anyone in this draft. I have some concerns, some questions about how he fits in Minnesota alongside D'Angelo Russell and Karl Towns. But look, you're getting, I think, the best playmaker in this draft, the player with the best vision. Struggled a little bit last season, making too many flashy plays or trying to make too many flashy plays. But, you know, I think in 5 years, we'll look back and say, you know, he struggled a little bit early in his NBA career, but turned out to be the most productive and the biggest star to come out of this draft. So that's why I'm taking him with the first pick.
This is a place where you and I are in total agreement. Like, I do think you could reasonably select three, maybe even four different players, number one overall in this draft. There is not an obvious number one guy like there was last year with Zion Williamson, or in 2012 with Anthony Davis, or in 2015 with Karl Anthony Towns. Sometimes 2003 LeBron James. Sometimes it's like it doesn't matter who's picking first. Everybody's selecting the same dude. That's not the case here. And so when the Minnesota Timberwolves got the first pick, it eliminates, I think, one of those three or four guys from contention. That's James Wiseman. Cause if you've got an all NBA center in Karl Anthony Towns, you're not going to take another center with the first overall pick, especially when it's not clear cut obvious that's the best talent available. So now I'm looking between other guys at the top, and LaMelo Ball's the guy for me. I'm with you. It's not a perfect fit. I understand other people's concerns. But with the first pick in the draft, mostly, I think you should be trying to find the guy who's going to have the best career. When you look up 5 years later, 10 years later, who had the best career from this draft? And I think on paper, at least, that guy is probably LaMelo Ball. So the Timberwolves select LaMelo Ball. That means Golden State Warriors are on the clock. And with the second pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Golden State Warriors select Anthony Edwards out of Georgia. There was a time when, after the lottery order was set, I had James Wiseman going second to the Warriors. And he might. We should also note, like, there's no guarantee the Warriors are going to even use this pick. They would reportedly prefer to package it with something else and maybe get a veteran who is better equipped to come in and help Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green win immediately next season, because the Warriors are going to be, if you look at the odds coming out of Vegas already for the 2020-21 NBA season, the Warriors are projected to finish top three in the West. You know, they lost Kevin Durant and they were really bad this past season, but they're jumping right to the top of the sport again. In fact, I personally think they are the biggest threat to the Lakers winning back-to-back titles. So do you want a 18, 19, 20-year-old rookie or a veteran? maybe a veteran. So if they can do a deal, they might not even pick here. But if they can't do a deal, you're looking at Anthony Edwards, Obi Toppin, small collection of prospects. And there was a time where I went with James Wiseman here. But the more and more I thought about it, if we already know one thing about the Warriors is that their best, most effective lineup, the closing lineup, is Draymond Green playing center. Do you really want to use a second pick in a draft on a guy who, if you're trying to maximize what you are in the closing seconds of high-stakes games, you probably take him off the court and move Draymond there? It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I could understand it if they go that direction, but I think instead you probably go Anthony Edwards. He's a big, strong, athletic guard. If nothing else, he's going to be able to score in the NBA. He makes life easier, I think, for Steph and Clay. And he can, early in his career, as soon as next season, at a place like Golden State, come off the bench if you want him to come off the bench and get buckets. And then eventually, you know, develop into, you would hope, the type of star that can be an all-NBA all-star thing. And you can keep this Golden State run going even as Clay and Steph start to age a little bit, because they're neither one of them 25 years old anymore. So with the second pick, if I'm Golden State, LaMelo Ball's off the board, probably going Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. And it's interesting, too. I think you can look at the two top teams in this draft, Minnesota and Golden State. I would say they're both probably in a similar spot where ideally I think they probably want to trade their pick and get a veteran who can fit their timelines a little bit better. Minnesota with D'Angelo Russell and Karl Towns are at a spot where I think they kind of want to win now. I don't think they want to wait and bet on LaMelo Ball being ready in 5 years. Same with Golden State. They probably want to bring in someone who can compete right away, because like you mentioned, Golden State is a team that could realistically win the championship next season.
The problem with trying to win now in Minnesota is that everybody in the West is trying to win now.
Yeah.
And so who are you better than? If you finish ninth or 15th in the West, you're in the lottery. It's better to be 15th than ninth. So can you crack the top eight? That's the question. And I'm not sure they can, even if they add a veteran. I mean, Lakers, Clippers, Nuggets seem automatic. Jazz seem automatic. Blazers probably seem automatic. What are the Rockets going to do? What's OKC going to do in terms of pushing forward or rebuild? The Grizzlies are still, moving in the right direction, getting a little bit older. The Suns look good in the bubble. Pelicans, it can't possibly be worse, you wouldn't think, especially if they get a full season out of Zion. So I understand the Timberwolves may be wanting to win now, but like, how can you even get where you want to go? I don't know that there's a path to win now for Minnesota, which means you might just take highest upside player, decide to keep that second pick. I mean, keep that first pick and then take highest upside player, which again would be LaMelo Ball. And hopefully you develop into something a little later on. Let's get to the third pick.
Yep. With the third overall pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select James Wiseman. And this is your boy, their Memphis product. Look, I'm a huge Cody Zeller fan, but, if you can upgrade at the center position with James Wiseman, you absolutely have to do it. 7'1". 7'6" wingspan, just a prodigious talent. And I think he is clearly one of the big three prospects in this class. I'm not totally convinced on him being a superstar, but I think he is a very safe prospect, a guy who's going to be a really good defensive player in the NBA for a long time. And, if the offense comes around, I think he can be, kind of a freakish athletic, center who can really change someone's franchise. So, that's why I'm taking what the third pick in this draft.
Yeah, I think this is the floor for Wiseman. Yeah. I know other people disagree. I just don't see how he gets past Charlotte at number three, assuming that he's available. Like, listen, there are some concerns here. I've talked about it enough in various podcasts. He did become the first healthy college basketball player in history to quit a team midseason to, quote, prepare for the NBA draft. And I know that had sparked some questions among NBA people. Just a year prior, Zion Williamson had locked up the number one pick in the draft, suffered a knee injury, people actually encouraging him, both in his personal life and on television, to stop playing amateur basketball and risk nothing else. And he didn't even think about it for a second. He was offended that you would suggest he might, because, you know, he went to college with his friends to try to win a national championship, to try to have a legacy of some sort. And so he came back just as soon as he could and didn't get where he wanted to go. But the idea that he would quit, it didn't even enter his mind. And then a year later, here's James Wiseman quitting week before Christmas, in a way that, again, sparked some questions among NBA executives. That said, he's a physical specimen. And at some point, you just can't pass on somebody that looks like him, that runs like him, that jumps like him. He's going to be in the league for a long time. Could be I think he'll be a tremendous shot alterer, shot blocker from the jump. Can he develop the type of skill set that you need a modern five to have, or you would at least prefer a modern five to have? We will see. And it is true that centers are valued less than they've ever been in professional basketball in this country, but still, it's a need for Charlotte. It is, and then you're also getting probably, I think, best talent available. James Wiseman at three makes a lot of sense. Let's go to the fourth pick. With the fourth pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Chicago Bulls select Obi Toppin, the consensus National Player of the Year out of Dayton. This is higher than some people have him going, and I've had him going as high as number two in previous mock drafts. I understand the concerns, or at least I'm aware of what they are, which is that he's already older and, to, you know, specifically 22 years old, and how much development is left there. That's what you will hear from the people who don't think you touch Obi Toppin in the top four. My counter to that would be the idea that you can't get better or improve at the age of 22 or 23 or 24 or 25 doesn't make any sense to me. There's a long list of guys in the NBA who have gotten better at advanced ages. And so would I prefer Obi Toppin to be this, what he was at Dayton, but also only be 19 years old? Yeah, I guess so. But like, I can't change his birth certificate. So he is what he is. And what he is to me is the safest pick in this draft. I would probably make him the favorite to be rookie of the year. Maybe his upside, like if you get the best version of Obi Toppin and the best version of LaMelo Ball, maybe the best version of LaMelo Ball is going to be better. In fact, that is what I believe. But the floor for Obi Toppin, I just don't see any scenario where he's not impactful right from the jump and for a long, long time. You know, 6'9", bouncy, athletic forward, led the nation in dunks. But he's not just a dunker. He shot 39% from three-point range, which suggests he can be a forward who can sit in the corner and not get a shot if you need him to. Obviously get a lot of stuff done around the rim. And if you're playing small ball, he can be your small ball five as well. In fact, he played a lot of that at Dayton. And so, I really like Obi Toppin. And if you're the Chicago Bulls picking fourth here, you can get him. I think you feel pretty good about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with this pick. I don't have Obi Toppin quite as high on my own personal rankings, but look, I can definitely see the appeal with Obi Toppin. Just an athletic freak. Can space the floor, knock down threes. I don't think he's quite as good defensively, and I think there's some real concerns there defensively, in terms of what he can be in the NBA, but, no question, just a super high floor, a guy that's gonna produce at a high level in the NBA. So, I love that pick at number four. Let's go to the fifth pick, the fifth pick in the 2020 NBA draft. The Cleveland Cavaliers select Denny Avdia from Israel. Cleveland's gone guard with its last two top 10 picks with Colin Sexton and Darius Garland. I don't think you can give up on either of them just yet. So, Avdia can help surround them with some more talent. I think he's a good playmaker, creative with the ball in his hands, a guy who I think could be a role playing wing in the NBA. And I think it kind of fits with what the Cavs already have in place there.
You know, obviously when we start talking about true international players, in other words, non-Americans who have never played in America. I label it that way because LaMelo Ball is an exception to that. We're all familiar with LaMelo Ball. I saw him when he was 13 years old for the first time. I've seen him a lot. Denny Avdia is someone I obviously haven't seen a lot, never seen in person, but I will tell you when Norlander and I started preparing for the podcast that would be focused on him, He's a really special talent. Like, I understand why there are some franchises that think he should be under consideration for, you know, the number one overall pick in this draft. I wouldn't go that far, but I also don't rule out the possibility of us looking up, you know, 4 years from now and going, oh, you know, that was maybe that was the guy who should have been the first pick in the draft. You know, we watched Luka Doncic, who is a star already in the NBA. And you go back to that draft just a few years ago that he was in with Marvin Bagley and DeAndre Ayton, Jaren Jackson Jr., Trey Young, Michael Porter Jr. And there's not a person on the planet who wouldn't take Luka Doncic first overall if we did that draft just a couple years later. And yet, you know, he went, what did he go, third in the draft?
Yeah.
He goes third in the draft. And like obviously there was no consensus about him back then. And I wonder sometimes, like, if we'd have watched Luka Doncic in advance of his draft dominate college basketball, would it have been just obvious who you have to take number one? Probably. And the NBA scouts should be better than that. Like, you know, they should be able to identify whatever it is they need to identify, whether it's competing in American colleges or overseas. But like, mm-hmm. people missed on him and missed on him, even though he was undeniably awesome. So, with Avdi, I think he fights against that a little bit, at least with the general American public. But man, when you dive into the tape and really watch him, he's a special talent. And I do think somebody who probably, will be a top five pick in this draft. And so him going fifth to the Cavaliers here makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Let's go to this. I think there's maybe some question about, you know, his competition, who he played against. There's probably a little bit of concern of, you know, how good of a shooter is he going to be? I think that's probably his swing skill, but, if he made some real strides when play picked back up earlier this summer. So, you know, I think he's a guy who's a very safe pick. And if the shot comes around, I think he'll be a top five prospect.
Let's go to the sixth pick. With the sixth pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Atlanta Hawks select Tyrese Haliburton out of Iowa State. I believe if you go look at my latest mock draft, which is a few weeks old right now, I don't have Tyrese Haliburton this high. But just like when I was talking about Denny Avdia, in prep work, in advance of the podcast we did focusing on him, Norlander and I did Tyrese Haliburton last week. And so I really dove into the numbers and really dove into the film and really came out thinking I have him too low. Wherever I have him, I don't have it in front of me, but wherever I have him, it's too low. He's like intangibles off the charts. Like, you can't find anybody who's ever been around him or worked with him to say a bad thing about him. Now, that's not important. I'd rather have a bad talented guy than a great, not talented guy, but like the intangibles are all positives and important. Beyond that, 6'5". Can guard multiple positions. He is a point guard, but he can play off the ball. Mm-hmm. Shot 43% from three as a freshman, 42% as a sophomore. Has added nearly 20 pounds since the end of the college basketball season. So if you're somebody who was concerned about his frame, well, still be concerned if you want to, but just know that he has addressed it already and continues to do so. And so, you put him in Atlanta with Trae Young, he can serve as Trae Young's backup. That's a team need. Or he can play with Trae Young and just give him another shooter on the court. Again, it's a pretty big sample size of three-point productivity. He made a lot, and he made them at a high rate. And so you give me somebody 6'5", guards multiple positions, really knows how to get into passing lanes, is a knockdown shooter, can handle the ball. Like, I really don't know what's not to like about Tyrese Haliburton. And that's why when I update my mock draft, I will have him probably going, six to the Atlanta Hawks, just like he is right here.
Yeah. I'm updating my mock draft today, actually, for tomorrow. So, spoiler alert on that. I guess keep a look on the site. That should be up Tuesday, but, I think he's going to be a top 10 pick. I don't think there's any question. I'm excited about him being able to fit alongside another lead guard. I think that's going to be super important to him because I don't know if he's, you know, a true initiator. I would rather have LaMelo Ball, obviously, as my lead guard over Tyrese Haliburton. I don't know if he's an elite athlete, a guy who can really create space, but playing alongside another lead guard or even, like you mentioned, being a backup, I think is going to be an excellent role for him and just super efficient on both ends of the court. can hit the three, and I think it's a perfect fit for a team like Atlanta.
All right, let's get on to the seventh pick. That's the Detroit Pistons. You're handling this one.
Yeah, with the seventh pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Detroit Pistons select Killian Hayes, the French point guard. And look, I don't think Derrick Rose is the long-term answer for the Pistons. I don't think that's any secret. They probably need to address the point guard spot. Hayes is number two on the CBS top 100 big board and just a left-handed killer, great passer, great playmaker. I love his upside. He's still a teenager and 6'5". I like his frame and everything about him, I think, just screams lottery potential. So I would go with him. I think his upside is pretty high. I don't think he has the star potential of some of these guys we've mentioned before, but again, another kind of like a safe prospect who fits a need for the Pistons, and I would be happy taking him at number seven.
I'm appreciative of you taking him at number seven because in previous mock drafts, I've had him going eighth to the New York Knicks, and they want no part of a French guard. They don't want to deal with it anymore. Just give me anybody other than Killian Hayes. So congrats, Knicks fans, if that's the way you feel. He's off the board here. He's going to Detroit, and now the Knicks are on the clock. With the eighth pick of the 2020 NBA draft, the New York Knicks select Sadiq Bey out of Villanova. He's a really interesting prospect. Sub 100 guy coming out of high school was, I believe, the least heralded prospect in Villanova's recruiting class that year. And yet from the jump, he was clearly the most impactful, played a big role as a freshman, became the star as a sophomore, and just, combo forward, 6'8", guards multiple positions, shoots threes at a high level. Really smart player. Like, you talk to people who've been around him, high basketball IQ. The Knicks need help basically everywhere, except for maybe center, but like basically everywhere. So why not bring somebody in with the eighth pick who is, that checks a lot of boxes, good size to play a combo forward in the modern NBA, is a reliable and proven three-point shooter, high basketball IQ, winner, and comes from a program that has a nice track record at this point of putting productive NBA players, putting productive players into the NBA. Like, you talk to Jay Wright, anybody on the staff, they all have a high opinion of him. I know this is higher than most people have Sadiq Bey going, but I really like him and think he's undervalued in some of the mock drafts.
Yeah, I like this pick. This is like a prototypical 3-and-D type guy who has a ton of value. He plays the wing. That's just an elite spot up shooter. So I can't complain. And I guess you're welcome for taking the French point guard. So. let's go to number nine, the Washington Wizards. With the ninth pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Wizards select Onyeka Okongwu from USC, the big man. Love Okongwu's potential. He is actually rated above James Wiseman on our top 100 board for now, and I think that may end up changing, but just a really good defensive player, a good lob catcher. I like his fit alongside John Wall and Brad Beal, and obviously, he was a massive producer at USC and crafty post score. I think just another guy who's going to come in and produce right away. And again, I don't love taking big men with lottery picks, but I think he's definitely worth it, especially with what Washington already has in place. Makes a lot of sense here for the Wizards at number nine.
A little bit like Sadiq Bey, although like Okongwu was heralded coming out of high school. It's not like he was Sadiq Bey was a sub 100 prospect. Onyeka Okongwu was a borderline 5-star guy, but I'll tell you, just a few summers ago, it's a really unique event out in Las Vegas where the best Nike grassroots team played the best Adidas grassroots team. They usually don't mix, but there was one clear cut best Nike team, one clear cut best Adidas team. And one way or another, they got them to play against each other. And Onyeka Okongwu was on that Adidas team, who's based out of California, which is where he's from. And I don't even think I wrote a word about him. I mean, I might have put his name in the column, But the star of the team was Evan Mobley, who's going to be a freshman at USC this upcoming season. If you'd have told me that night, because it was late at night, you'd have told me that night I was watching a future top 10 pick, I'd have been like, oh, yeah, Evan Mobley, of course. And they said, no. Two future top 10 picks, Evan Mobley and the other big. I was like, I don't know, but he was awesome at USC. And for people who don't know, he went to Chino Hills High School, which means, and I asked Norlander this on a podcast, and I don't think, and people tweeted, I don't think we ever got a definitive answer. When's the last time two players that played together in high school both went top 10 in the same NBA draft? One example is Greg Oden and Mike Conley. They both went top four, I think, in their NBA draft. But it's a very rare thing. And LaMelo Ball and Onyeka Okongwu played together once upon a time in high school. So that's another little neat thing about him. I like Okongwu. I don't think if I were ranking centers, I would have him above James Wiseman. But I don't think it's crazy for you to have him there. And if you're trying to argue Okongwu over Wiseman, the way you might do it is Wiseman is a center and only a center. That's all he's going to be. Okongwu, I think, can play center or power forward. I think he can play either front court position, which makes him more versatile. And obviously, versatility is a very important thing in the NBA these days.
Yep. I'm with you.
Let's go to the 10th pick in the 2020 NBA draft. With the 10th pick of the 2020 NBA draft, the Phoenix Suns select Aaron Nesmith out of Vanderbilt. Here's another guy who wasn't that heralded coming out of high school, but really, really showed himself to be a legitimate NBA prospect not long after stepping on campus in Nashville. 6'5 guard, great body, maybe the best shooter in this draft. Like, you know, limited sample size in his final season of college because he suffered a season-ending injury, but I do think there's enough there to know that you're getting a 6'5 shooter, like somebody who could just knock down shots. I think from day one in the, you know, from the moment he steps into the NBA, Phoenix is, like I mentioned earlier, in the Western Conference. Every Western Conference team is probably trying to win now. The Suns, after what they did in the bubble, it at least suggests that they do have a chance to win now and maybe make the Western Conference playoffs in 2021. And so why not add more shooting? Like, there's not a team in the NBA that couldn't use more shooting. And so if you've got a 6'5 guard who's maybe the best shooter in this draft available to you, I'd just take him right here and feel pretty good about it. Phoenix Suns take Aaron Nesmith.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm the Suns, I'm probably looking at maybe a point guard. I think their wing depth is decent, but yeah, someone like Nesmith who shot above 50% from three last season, it's pretty impossible to try and pass on that. So I will not dispute you on that. Number 11, the San Antonio Spurs are on the clock at number 11, and they will select Isaac Okoro from Auburn. Just an athletic marvel, 3-and-D type player who can't really hit the three very well, but very interesting abilities as a creator on the ball. I love what he brings to the defensive end of the floor. I think he can guard multiple positions, and you know, the NBA now is all about multi-positional defenders and how versatile you can be. So I think Okoro is a guy who is probably a longer term prospect, but the Spurs are known for their development. And I think Okoro is a guy who, with the right development, can be one of the most impactful wings to come out of this draft.
You know, you mentioned development. I think that's so important with most of these guys. Like, some people would just be great wherever they landed. Like, LeBron James could have been drafted by Cleveland, or it didn't matter. He was always going to be LeBron James.
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant was always going to be Kobe Bryant. There are those types of talents. And then there's other guys where, I don't know if Tyler Hero is Tyler Hero if he gets drafted by somebody other than Miami. You know, I don't know if Fred VanVleet is Fred VanVleet if he spends the early part of his career somewhere other than Toronto. And when you are talking about franchises that have a pretty good track record of taking not the sure bet, can't miss guys, but guys that, I mean, we talk about lottery picks like they're all guaranteed to be great. I mean, like, we're going to go through this draft and we're going to be like, oh, he's going to be terrific. Oh, I really like him. And we'll look up in 3 years and half these guys will be nobodies. I mean, that is the nature of the NBA draft. But which franchises can take these guys that could go either way and have a pretty good hit record of making them into something? The Spurs are one of those franchises. Yep. And Okoro, I just think, is perfect there because he also seems to be about a lot of the stuff they're about. Like at Auburn, he was their most important player. And, you know, Auburn was humming along pretty good. The efficiency numbers weren't great, but they were winning. They were just winning games and winning. Okoro goes out. They, I think, lose 3 of 4, like immediately. He comes back. They get good again. I remember people, because I got to do this stupid top 25 and one every morning throughout the season. And Auburn goes through that little rough stretch. And it's like, ooh, what's wrong with Auburn? Oh, what do you mean what's wrong with Auburn? Their most important player is not playing. Like, this is what happens to college basketball teams. He impacts winning, takes pride on the defensive end of the court, seems to understand team defense in a way that is unique for somebody his age. And so he just seems like he'd be perfect in San Antonio. They'd be lucky. I'm not sure he'll slip all the way to 11. He did here. I don't know that he actually will on draft night. We'll see. But if he's there at 11 and they take him, it's a good match. Spurs get a player who impacts winning, and Isaac Okoro gets a franchise that will probably develop him properly. Let's go to the 12th pick. With the 12th pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Sacramento Kings select Devin Vassell out of Florida State. And before I talk much about him, I want to ask you about this video that surfaced. I guess it was last week. I believe you wrote about it, but there's a 20-second video of Vassell shooting, and he's cocking the ball. Like, he had some questions about his mechanics at Florida State, even though he shot a good percentage. Then this video surfaces and he's cocking the ball behind his head. Now the ball's going in, but it still looks weird and it's not encouraging. Do you think that's real, or was that him just like sometimes? Okay. So like my kids got a basketball goal, right? For my little guys. And like, I know how to shoot a basketball. I'm not pretending I'm good, but I know how to do it. But then every once in a while, I'll just grab it and just throw it up there. And, you know, I'm just goofing around. Was that really the way Devin Vassell shoots, or was he just goofing around?
That is, so I did write about this for CBS Sports. That is not the way he shot last season.
No.
It's similar. He does have a, you know, kind of a above the head release, but the video that you just alluded to was 20 seconds. It showed exactly two shots, both of which looked like a parody. It looked fake. I thought it was a joke. And in fact, I'm kind of hoping that it was a joke because he cocked it back so far behind his head. And I actually screenshotted it when he was at the top of his release. His body looked like a C. It was just crooked. And I can't believe that it's real. I'm hoping that it's not real, and I'm trying not to overreact, honestly, but I'm glad you're taking him off my hands at number 12, because I think I would just keep passing on him. I'm a little bit concerned about that video, and I'm hoping that this isn't a permanent change in his shooting mechanics.
The only reason I'm going to assume that that is not really the way he shoots is because when you are a projected lottery pick, and okay, college is over. Now all these guys go off to wherever they go, Miami, LA, Chicago, whatever. And they are working with basketball people. And if you see somebody change their mechanics heading into a draft, it is usually, not usually, always for the better. Now it might make them a poorer shooter, initially, but the goal is to try to get the shot right and then get back to making shots. There is no basketball person on the planet who would bring Devin Vassell in and then and make him start shooting that way. And if you saw him shooting that way, you would stop it immediately. So I'm just going to assume that that's not real. Like, I know the video's real and it's really him. I'm going to assume that is not the way he actually shoots, because if you bring him in, and it's like your job, like these agents hire you to work with these players in advance of a draft. There's no scenario where somebody works with Devin Vassell to get him shooting that way. If he comes to them shooting that way, they work with him to get rid of that. There's no way he comes to them with what he was and they turn it into that. I just can't believe that that's true.
Yeah, you're talking about a guy who in two seasons at Florida State shot 41.7% from the three-point range. You know, I don't think it was necessarily broken. If anything, you probably want to speed up his release a little bit. And it looks like he elongated it. I, you know, again, this is probably small sample size, massive overreaction. And I'm sure he's going to be a great NBA player. But yeah, this is something to definitely keep on the radar for sure.
You know, every once in a while, as I'm just thinking through this, like you'll see LeBron James pregame imitating somebody else.
Yeah.
And if we just had a 20-second video of LeBron James and he was shooting, imitating Devin Vassell, we wouldn't be going, oh my God, is that the way LeBron James shoots? We'd be going, oh, it's just a video. He's just goofing around. I'm hoping Vassell was just goofing around. In fact, I'm assuming he was just goofing around.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to cross our fingers and hope so. All right, with the 13th pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the New Orleans Pelicans select Patrick Williams, Devin Vassell's Florida State teammate, long athletic wing. I think he can be a real difference maker on defense. Very raw in terms of what he can be on offense. But, you know, the more I kind of dig into him, I think he's going to be a really safe role-playing type prospect, a guy who can – make plays on defense, eventually will grow into a better offensive weapon and a guy who I think has a pretty high ceiling in terms of what he can be. So there's not a lot of star power potential in this draft once you get past those kind of big three or big four. He's a guy who I think could realistically be one of the stars from this draft if he meets the ceiling. So I'm happy that Patrick Williams is falling to number 13 here. I think he can be a difference maker.
I do think his upside is probably higher than I don't think. In other words, we've got him going 13th here. I'm not sure there are 12 players in the draft with a higher upside than Patrick Williams. The trick, of course, is like, can you get there? You know, like the previous drafts are filled with lottery picks who had tremendous upside and they just never become anything. And that again, I know I said this earlier, but like that's important to remember. Like all these guys, you can talk yourself into them. And then reality happens and three of them are awesome. You know, six of them are role players. And then it's just a bunch of, you know, it's just whatever, you know, like, so he seems to me to be the type of guy who could really develop into something nice where you go, I guess I'd say this. Neither one of these things would surprise me. We look up in 5 years and we go, man, how did Patrick Williams go 13th in the draft? How did they let him slip all the way down there? Or we could look up in 5 years and go, wonder where Patrick Williams is now. You know, neither one of those things would surprise me.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's go to the 14th pick, the final pick of the lottery. With the 14th pick of the 2020 NBA draft, the Boston Celtics select Kyra Lewis out of Alabama. You mentioned at 10 when I had the Phoenix Suns, I took Aaron Nesmith. You said you might have looked at a point guard there. Yep. There is some reports that suggest Phoenix is looking at point guard there. If I were taking a point guard there, the guy I would take is Kyra Lewis. You know, I decided to go Nesmith, then he slips to 14. I'll take him with Boston. You know, Kemba Walker is 30 years old and coming off a disappointing playoffs. And, you know, that doesn't mean that you're going to replace Kemba Walker next season with a rookie, but, you know, the Celtics have hit on, I mean, you know, Jason Tatum is a star. Jaylen Brown is really good. Marcus Smart is what he is. Where they seem to be needing to upgrade is the one in the five, and maybe not the one immediately, but certainly when you're trying to win a title with Jason Tatum, is that – well, I mean, listen, you were trying to win a title this season with Jason Tatum, and you'll be trying to do it next season with Jason Tatum. They haven't done it yet. Jason Tatum could be entering his actual prime with a different point guard than Kemba Walker, I guess is what I'm saying. And Kyra Lewis is a good candidate to be that guy. He's only 19 years old, but he averaged 18.5 points, 5.2 assists, 4.8 rebounds this past season in Alabama. Made 49% of his three-point attempts in Alabama's final seven games. And I know I'm drawing a line and making it look good, but it, like, that at least suggests he's not just a get up and down the court point guard as much as there's a scenario where he could develop into a reliable shooter as well. And at that position in the NBA these days, unless you're Rajon Rondo, you really need to be able to shoot the ball, or at least it's preferable if you can shoot it. There is a sample size, small maybe, but sample size there that suggests Kyra Lewis can be that guy. Other thing that's encouraging is, you know, I've talked to Avery Johnson about Kyra Lewis and he loves him, like absolutely loves him. And he doesn't have to love him as a former, like, I'm always interested when I talk to coaches about their players or former players. Sometimes you can, I can tell a lot by what you're not willing to say. Like, you don't trash him. You just say, ah, yeah, he's good talent. You know, like, just sort of end it there. I go, ooh, he doesn't love him. Otherwise he would say more than what he's saying. But when Avery goes out of his way to gush about Kyra Lewis, that says something to me. I mean, that's a former NBA point guard gushing about somebody he thinks is going to be a really good NBA point guard. And no, you know, he was around him as much as anybody. I know, you know, Nate Oates coached him in this second year of college, but Avery recruited him, Avery enrolled him, Avery coached him, Avery knows him really well. The fact that Avery has that high of an opinion of him, higher than you and I, even though we've got him in the lottery, to me is a good sign for Kyra Lewis.
Yeah, I think we did actually a mock draft on CBS Sports HQ, and I think Avery actually selected Kyra with like a top five pick. So, yeah. And maybe he's a little bit biased, right? But yeah, I think certainly his upside is pretty high in Boston. You know, obviously even their depth at point guard behind Kimball Walker is not great. You know, Brad Wanamaker is their backup point guard. So, you know, even if he doesn't come in and immediately usurp Kimball Walker as a starting point guard, we don't expect that. I think he could be, you know, the team second unit, and eventually maybe he takes over that spot.
So that is the lottery in the books. That means we are moving on to the 15th pick. The Orlando Magic are on the clock, and we're going to get to that momentarily. But first, check this out.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What about the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
So the lottery is in the book. The 14th pick, Boston Celtics, took Kyra Lewis. We move on to the Orlando Magic, picking 15th. Kyle Boone, that's your pick.
Yep, with the 15th pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Orlando Magic select Tyrese Maxey, one-and-done freshman from Kentucky. Maxey is a great on-ball defender, but he shot just 29.2% from three-point range at Kentucky. He's not probably going to be a primary guard in the NBA, but what he can be, I think, in the NBA as an elite defender, a guy who can play off the ball. I think he has a safe role in the NBA, and the Magic already have a lead guard in place with Markelle Fultz. So I think he can be a defensive eraser, a guy who can play where there's already a lead guard in place. And maybe he kind of follows that Tyler Hero path, a guy who maybe didn't shoot it all that well at Kentucky, but finds more space in the NBA, and as a result, finds a little bit more shooting success in the NBA as well. So I'm betting low on Tyrese Maxey, and this is a guy who I think was a top five prospect for us coming into the NBA, into the college season. So a guy that I think has a really nice pedigree, and I think his shot will eventually come around.
This is a good time to be a Kentucky player entering a draft, given what we just watched in the bubble, whether it was Tyler Hero or Jamal Murray or Bam Adebayo, like Kentucky players. And I mentioned those and not Anthony Davis, because like we all knew what Anthony Davis was, right? Like nobody was arguing about Anthony Davis coming into the 2012 NBA draft. He is one of those guys like LeBron, like Zion, like Karl Anthony Towns, where everybody agreed if you're picking first in this draft, you take Anthony Davis. The other guys, some loved them, some didn't. There was no consensus about Jamal Murray or Bam Adebayo or Tyler Hero, even Devin Booker. And yet there's a pretty significant list of former Kentucky players under John Calipari who are whatever in college and then are on the verge of becoming or already are stars in the NBA. And so if you're Tyrese Maxey, you're just hoping to be the next one. And if you're the Orlando Magic picking here, you're hoping he's the next one. But let's not lie to each other. He wasn't great at Kentucky. He just wasn't. I remember Champions Classic. I guess Kentucky played Michigan State. I don't remember. It feels like it was probably Michigan State. I was there. I don't remember. But he balled out. He was great and put a big number up. And John Calipari after the game said, that's the kid I recruited. And he said, but let me tell you something. I hadn't seen him since I enrolled him until tonight. Like I have not seen that in practice at all. And now maybe this will be a light switch, flips on for him. Maybe he's just a guy who, you know, cause John has said, like, and everybody, there's some guys who you don't see it in practices, but you put nine other dudes on the court with them, say, let's go play a game and they show up. And he's maybe that's what Tyrese Maxey is. I don't know, but like I have not, I recruited a killer and I saw the killer tonight. I ain't seen him anytime between the day I signed him and tonight. I didn't see him at all. So I was like, okay, well, maybe this is Tyrese Maxey about to compete for National Player of the Year. And then he was just whatever. And he didn't, he had moments, but not, he wasn't consistently great. And he didn't shoot it. And so I do think you are, if you're using a top 15 pick on him, you're probably using it based on two things. One, I think the killer thing that we've seen is that's real and that's going to be there. And don't get caught undervaluing Kentucky players, especially Kentucky guards. Yes. They start in the bubble and this is going to be the next dude, you know, that outperforms his place in his draft. That's what you're hoping Tyrese Maxey is.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess a word of caution too is a guy who, I thought was going to be that dude for Kentucky last season was Tyrese Maxey. He didn't end up really being that dude. And the last guy that I kind of thought of in that same category was Kevin Knox, a guy who I thought was going to be that dude for Kentucky. He had some great moments at Kentucky, ended up being a lottery pick. And he, I mean, I think it's fair to say he's been basically a bust in the NBA. So, you know, for every Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo, guys who maybe don't perform at a star level in college and end up being really good in the NBA, there's the Kevin Knoxes of the world. And so I'm high on Tyrese Maxey. That's why I'm taking him with the lottery pick or the 15th pick. But, there's no guarantee that he turns this thing around.
With the 16th pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Portland Blazers select RJ Hampton. This is another five-star prospect, American, prospect who, you know, decided to skip college and play overseas. He signed with a team out of New Zealand. Wasn't great, but he did average 8.8 points, 3.0 rebounds, 2.4 assists per game before, shutting it down. And, you know, I was talking to somebody who works for an NBA team last week and they asked me about him because RJ Hampton was considering Memphis and worked out here a lot, with Penny Hardaway and Mike Miller, even after he decided not to come to college. Like he then went to New Zealand, played, and then came back to Memphis and was working out during a pandemic, at the Memphis practice facility in violation of university protocols. Like I don't want to say Penny Hardaway got in trouble. Like Penny Hardaway's not going to get, nobody's going to punish Penny Hardaway at the University of Memphis, but they had to shut it down. Like once RJ Hampton and Mike Miller were putting, Instagram stories and it's like, the campus is supposed to be shut down. Nobody's allowed on it, but here's RJ Hampton working out every day. So I don't know whether it was university president or somewhere lower, but they had to step in and say, RJ Hampton cannot be coming into this practice. Our own basketball players aren't allowed in the practice facility right now. But the point is he came back here and he's been around a lot of people, that I know well. And they love him. I mean, would they have preferred him to come to college and play inside FedEx Forum? Sure. But they really like him. the question becomes, is he ever going to be able to shoot it the way you want him to shoot it? Because he's not a good shooter right now. He has been working with Mike Miller, who's an accomplished shooter, obviously, and changed the shot a little bit. And so I don't know that that can be interpreted as anything other than a good thing. But if you're the Blazers, you probably need backcourt help. I think sometimes people go, well, they got Damian Lillard, they got CJ McCollum. Well, what else they got? I mean, those dudes play heavy minutes.
Yes.
And, you know, to add a guy who could maybe be a backup point guard, also play off the ball. He's a combo guard more than he is a point guard, but like you could put the ball in his hands and let him go make plays. Like he's got a first step. He can get by people. I think he makes a lot of sense. If he's available at 16, the Blazers, listen, you get to the playoffs, then Lillard and McCollum are going to go. You don't need them in February playing heavy, as heavy minutes as they do. And so getting them some help is probably wise. And RJ Hampton, I think, qualifies as help.
Yeah, I'm with that. All right, with the 17th pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Minnesota Timberwolves select Memphis product Precious Achiuwa. Achiuwa, I think, is one of the best defensive players in this draft. Certainly, I think, one of the most versatile. A lob finisher at Memphis. Not much of anything on offense, but just elite on defense. And I think in time, the offense will eventually come around. This is your Memphis homie, Precious Achiuwa. So tell me about Precious and where you view him.
I like him a lot. He was awesome at Memphis, a statistical monster. Yeah. You know, he came there to play beside James Wiseman. Wiseman's going to be the five. He's going to be the four. Wiseman quits the team. He's got to play the five. I can tell you that he didn't like that at first. He thought that it was, because you know how it is these days. Every two guard thinks he's a point guard. Every wing thinks he's a two guard. Every power forward thinks he's a wing. Every center thinks he's a power forward. Everybody wants to play a position down because, you know, because Kevin Durant's 6'11 and can play on the wing, right? So nobody thinks they're who they are. It's why when you look at official rosters in college, you almost never see centers. Even though like somebody has to play what we call center, but like nobody wants to be called a center except maybe Luka Garza. So, and maybe not. I don't know. So Precious is probably a four who wants to play three and was suddenly playing five. He didn't like it. And one of the reasons was he thought that it was hurting him with NBA people. I need to show him what I can do out on the perimeter. And how can I show him what I can do when I'm playing center? Here's the truth. He can't do much on the perimeter. Not right now. He doesn't have that skill set. Now, you know, you throw it to him, he'll shoot it. But that's not the way you wanted your offense run. So I think playing center actually benefited him because it eliminated a lot of the stuff that if you saw it, you'd go, I don't 6'9", constantly hanging out on the perimeter, constantly taking jumpers that he doesn't make. Doesn't mean he can't make them, but he doesn't make them. He can, but he doesn't. You don't see any of that. You force him to be around the rim, and then around the rim, he's a monster. Just grabbing every rebound, dunking every ball. He's really good. And I think actually benefited from playing what amounts to the five for most of his time at Memphis. Where he's going to make his money, there were multiple times, and I think most notably in a game against Houston, late game situation, he gets switched on to Caleb Mills. So it's your classic, you know, big on a guard. Great matchup for Houston in theory. Nope. Couldn't get a shot off. Precious to it. Like guarding in space. He is a big who can guard in space, moves his feet, knows how to play. That's great. That's why he'll make millions and millions of dollars. For me, the question is, what else can he be? I know what he is. What else can he be? I really do think his draft range is like 10 to 22. Like, because if you think he's going to develop an offensive skill set to go with the athleticism, the motor, the defensive ability, the, you know, intangibles, people like him. Like, you know, if he was people like him, his coaches liked him, his teammates liked him. That's all good stuff. So if you believe he can become an offensive player as well, like, you know, actually put the ball on the floor a little bit, actually make that shot. Well, then take him 10th. If you don't think that's going to develop, it's not really there, take him 22nd. You know, there's a big, I don't want to say his range is as wide as anybody's because I don't think it actually is, but I do believe his range is pretty wide. People commonly refer to him as, you know, future lottery pick, and he might be, but I'm not 100% sold he's a top 20 pick unless you're a franchise that believes he's going to be able to do some of the things he thinks he can do.
Yeah, and maybe he's just so elite on defense that teams will say, you know what, if he's still a zero on offense or close to a zero on offense and never really develops that perimeter game that he wants to, he's just so good on defense that we think he's worthy of a top 15 pick. I totally understand. I think that's mostly why I have him inside my top 20 is just because he can guard 1 through 5. So, you know, and maybe that's the case. But, yeah, certainly I think he's another guy who – has a pretty wide range of draft outcomes.
Let's go to the 18th pick. With the 18th pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Dallas Mavericks select Jalen Smith out of Maryland. He's a 6'10 big, can play both the 4 and the 5. Shot 37% from 3, 75% from the free throw line. That's a shooter. Like when you've got a good 3-point percentage backed up by a good free throw percentage, that means you're a good shooter. Sometimes you can look at somebody who's not a good 3-point shooter or they don't have the percentage, but you look at the free throw percentage. And if it's good, you go, okay, like a guy shot 32% from 3-point range, but is an 81% free throw shooter. All right, we'll figure this out. Jalen Smith checks both boxes, 37% 3-point shooter, 75% for the free throw line. So he's a big who stretches the floor. And that is what he will be in the NBA. And if you're Dallas adding another shooter to play with Luka, that makes sense. And I love, or like, I should say like, Kristaps Porzingis, but he's regularly missing games. Yep. And has been for much of his career. He was relatively healthy this past season, but then obviously had to shut it down in the playoffs. So, you know, it doesn't mean that he won't play 82 games whenever the next season starts. But there is some injury stuff there that is at least somewhat concerning. So to add a position need, but somebody who did something that I think is relatively rare, or at least not as common as people say. You see freshmen who are heralded, they're on the fence, like, yeah, could go enter the draft, could come back to school. They decide to come back to school. What do they always say? I'm coming back to improve on A, B, and C and improve my draft stock. And then you look up a year later, they're roughly the same guy, maybe a little better, but the draft stock still is where it is, maybe even worse. Jalen Smith actually improved his draft stock. Like, he came back to school. He got better. He got bigger. The numbers were all, for the most part, better across the board. He showed that he could be a reliable perimeter shooter, showed that he can play either front court position. I like him. I think I probably like him more than most, but I especially like him in Dallas if he were available at 18.
Yeah. And not playing next to Bruno Fernando, I think obviously helped. He eventually, you know, as a freshman playing alongside Bruno Fernando, was really good. And I think probably could have been, you know, a top 40 pick last year, came back and really solidified himself as the clear cut number one big man on that team and, improved as a shooter. I think that's probably the biggest thing. He's essentially a stretch five who, you know, a fit with Dallas next to Luka, I think is a perfect fit. So I love that. With the 19th pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Brooklyn Nets select Cole Anthony from North Carolina. Anthony was injury plagued a little bit last season, but versatile shot maker, can be a microwave type of scorer off the bench. The Nets have KD and Kyrie, so, you know, they don't necessarily need offense, but maybe a guy who can come off the bench and add some offense and scoring for them, has some ball handling abilities. I could see him captaining a second unit and maybe growing into more, in time, but a guy who I think is almost certainly going to be a top 20 pick in this draft.
Boy, would there be a team in the NBA with more shot hunters on the same roster than Brooklyn if Cole Anthony's there? I'd love Kyrie, KD, and Cole Anthony fighting over shots would be the best. I like Cole Anthony. I think he's going to be a productive NBA player. In other words, you're going to look at the numbers. You're going to go, he's scoring. He's going to score in the NBA. The question becomes, and I've had multiple people who work in that league ask me, is like, okay, is he, you going to win with Cole Anthony? That's the question. Like, is that the guy you win with? Or does he just, is it a bunch of stats for bad teams? Like, are you going to look up in 8 years and Cole Anthony is still in the league and he's been averaging in excess of 20 points per game, but never made the playoffs? Just been a good scorer on a bad team over and over and over again. And my answer is maybe, you know, like, listen, maybe we'll see. I do think where he lands is very important. I think the worst thing for Cole Anthony would be end up on a team that's going to win 30 games. Yeah. I would rather him go to a place like Brooklyn and be a part of a winning team, even if he plays a minor role, than for him to go to a bad team and play major minutes. Cause then it just sort of feeds into that narrative. Oh, there's Cole Anthony getting all the shots and his team lost by 14. They're on a 6-game losing streak. Like if I were Greg Anthony, I would want my son to go, if you told me right now, can go to a bad team, but lead the team in minutes and shots, or go to a good team and play a relatively minor role. What do you want? Good team, minor role. Like, let's go learn how to win and learn how to, get productive points, be more efficient. And I don't think you can do that if you're Cole Anthony, if you're in a situation where somebody's just handing you the ball from day one and telling you to go. So Brooklyn would be a nice spot for him, I think, not to mention being with, Steve Nash, who's, obviously an all-time great, point guard. I'm not saying he's going to be Damian Lillard, but if you're trying to imagine, you know, what he could be, like a high level aggressive scorer at the one, a lead guard who can really go get buckets, like, that's there for Cole Anthony. That is a possible outcome. And so I think if you're Brooklyn and he slips this far, and he really might on draft night, which is wild to think about considering this time last year, some people thought he would be the number one pick in the 2020 NBA draft. Now he won't sniff that. I mean, maybe he goes in the lottery, but you know, going all the way down at 19 is certainly possible. But for me, the fit for Cole Anthony is going to be very important, and a fit in Brooklyn, I think that's a pretty good fit.
I'm drafting him with the expectation that he's going to be a guy who comes off the bench and scores. Now, if I'm drafting him, you know, with a top 10 pick and I'm hoping that he comes in and is my lead guard from day one, I'm probably going to be disappointed. But he's a guy who I think can, like you said, he can hunt shots. He can get you offense. He's a versatile shot maker and a guy who I think is going to put up pretty quality production in the NBA, even if it's not necessarily efficient. So, I would be happy with spending a top 20 pick on him. I think you run the risk of being a little bit disappointed if you're spending a top 10 pick on him.
With the 20th pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Miami Heat select another point guard, Trey Jones, out of Duke. Obviously, the Heat, one of the biggest stories in this past NBA season, making it all the way to the finals as the fifth seed in the East. And I do think they're going to bring Goran Dragic back. If only because, like, what are your options if you don't bring him back? You know, they'll probably bring him back on a big one-year deal so they get the money off the books summer 2021, but you don't blow up a team that just went to the NBA Finals. It doesn't make them the favorite to get there again, but I do think they're bringing Goran Dragic back. But he is a free agent, and Kendrick Nunn, who was at least relevant, really good, I guess I should say, top five rookie of the year voting as a rookie, he got moved mostly out of the rotation in the playoffs. So that suggests, they don't trust him that much. And so you might be looking for a point guard to back up Dragic and then take over for Goran Dragic once you do move on from him. And I think Trey Jones can be that guy. He averaged 16.2 points, 6.4 assists last season, and actually shot it well enough from the perimeter down the stretch to get his shooting percentage up to 36.1 from three-point range. His older brother, Tyus, is a high-level backup point guard in the NBA. He's in Memphis backing up John Morant, and he's really good. Like, the Grizzlies weren't good in the bubble for a variety of reasons. A, they just weren't that good anyway. They got in a position to make the playoffs by beating bad teams. And then when you get to the bubble, there's no bad team. So, like, you get what you get. But part of the reason they struggled was they didn't have a backup point guard. Tyus Jones was hurt. So I say all that to say this. I think Trey Jones is going to be better than Tyus Jones. And I think Tyus Jones is one of the better backup point guards in the NBA right now. So like the floor, I would think, for Trey Jones is a run your team, come off the bench, backup point guard who can reliably knock down a shot and really, really put pressure on the ball, guard his position. That's the floor. The ceiling is he develops into a quality starting point guard in the NBA. And we talked earlier about franchises that have a history of developing players properly and good cultures. Well, the Miami Heat's probably at the top of that list. So, this would be a great spot for Trey Jones. Like, you'd be thrilled. Everybody wants to go number one in the draft, but if you're not going to go number one and this is your range, going 20th to the Miami Heat under these circumstances is actually great. So I think it'd be terrific for Trey Jones and a quality pick for the Miami Heat as well.
Yeah, I love this pick. I think this is a perfect fit for Trey Jones, just because they probably need a backup point guard. And I would bet on Trey Jones at least being a competent backup for a long time in the NBA. With the 21st pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Philadelphia 76ers select Desmond Bain from TCU. And this is probably going to surprise some folks, a four-year player in college, but a career 43.3% three-point shooter in college, a guy who has really kind of caught the attention of teams late in this draft process. And I would not be surprised if we look up and he is, you know, like a late lottery top 20 type of player. And, you know, the NBA obviously prioritizes three-point shooting. He is one of the very best three-point shooters in this draft. And Philadelphia, this may be a little bit rich, but they need three-point shooting. And I think Bain fills a need for them. And so, yeah, with the 21st pick, I feel good about this.
You know, if you go back during the college basketball season and you look at mock drafts, because, you know, listen, I bookmark everybody's. I'm not going to lie. It's not, you know, of course you look at other people's work and I read about them. There are things that you learn from other people who make a living doing this. And so you go back to Desmond Bain's not really in any of these mock drafts. And he starts popping up because we're all having conversations with NBA people, whether it's actual general managers and decision makers or just people who work in advanced scouting or whatever. We all have sources and we're all in relatively constant contact with these people. And Desmond Bain's name has been coming up a lot. And I think it's one of those deals where when you really, it's a little bit like what I said about Tyrese Halliburton earlier. When you really dive in to the numbers and really start digging deeper, like there's a lot there to like. You know, again, everybody needs shooters with size. Everybody needs shooters with size. Well, here's a shooter with pretty good size. And I don't know that he could actually go in the top 10 of this draft. I think you suggested that maybe that's a possibility. Here's what I would say. Remember last year, when Cameron Johnson went 11th and people are like, whoa, yeah. I think this could be this version's draft of Cameron Johnson. Whoa, like Desmond Bain 18th. Like I do think something like that is possible where, which would surprise some people because he has not been talked about that way ever and hasn't been projected that way ever. But again, when you come out of that bubble, seeing how valuable shooting is, and then you got a guy with size here who can really shoot it. He looks like a first round pick to me, and I'm with you. I don't know if 10, getting up in that range is possible, but in the teens, yeah, and certainly in the 20s, I think that's probably what we're looking at. So yeah, that's an interesting pick. Desmond Bain going 21st to the Sixers. And obviously the Sixers are a team that could use more shooting because at least one of their best players can't shoot the ball at all. It is a problem. With the 22nd pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Denver Nuggets select Josh Green out of Arizona. Look, Denver is set at point guard and center, right? So, Jamal Murray, obviously at point guard, Nikola Jokic at center. So we're just trying to look, at least I would be, I'm trying to look in between those guys, like who could play in theory with those guys. And so taking a wing with the 22nd pick makes sense to me. And at least on my big board, if you will, Josh Green is the best available wing at this point. He's not a great playmaker or passer yet. It was a little disappointing, inconsistent at Arizona, but he is a great athlete and he can guard multiple positions. And I've had one of the guys who works in the NBA that I trust as much as anybody. When I would consult with him on mock drafts or just ideas I was having about prospects or people I'd seen, maybe people I like that aren't, I don't see other people paying much attention to. One of the things this guy always says to me is, don't ever lose track or focus of the fact that athleticism is really important. Like being a great athlete is a great place to start. You know, we can work on some of the other stuff, but like great athletes are really valuable. This guy works for one of the best franchises in the NBA. And if you ask him what's most important to you, he would list athleticism and shooting in some order. And at the very least, Josh Green's a great athlete. Like that's there. And so if you're looking for best wing available, I think he's probably best wing available here, even if you are betting on him to be something he wasn't at Arizona. You know, Arizona had, you know, multiple first round picks, maybe as many as three, and they just weren't very good. And part of that was Josh Green wasn't very good, but there's a list of players who were underwhelming in college, particularly one and done guys, who then looked great in the NBA. And, you know, I'm not ruling out the possibility Josh Green could be one of those guys.
Yeah. And I think when you're scouting players too, you have to scout with context. You have to know that Josh Green, you know, maybe wasn't great, but look, Nico Mannion was a five-star prospect. He wasn't necessarily a world beater either. Right. I think Zeke Nagy was probably Arizona's best player. And the fact that he played next to Nico Mannion, who really was the primary ball handler, you know, maybe we didn't see a lot of untapped potential in terms of what Josh Green can be, as a playmaker. You know, the athleticism is there. Absolutely. The physical tools are there. I think he can be a good defender. He shot a respectable rate from the 3-point line. So yeah, I love this pick, and I think he's a wing who can fill a role. And, at number 22, I think that's good value. With the 23rd pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Utah Jazz select Leandro Balmaro. This is a draft and stash pick for me. He's expected to stay overseas, plays for Barcelona's B team, but an interesting playmaker on the ball. He has really good handles, an improving shot, and I just love the fact that he can make plays off the bounce. When you're 6'8" and you can do that, I think it definitely gives you an advantage. The Jazz tend to kind of prioritize this type of player, this archetype, guys who are really big and can make plays, the kind of the Joe Ingles type of prospect. So, you know, long term, I really like his upside. And in terms of what he can be long term, I think the Jazz, this is more of the future pick and what he can be in 3 to 4 years.
Right. And he's an obvious draft and stash guy. And if he's not going, like, okay, like if he's there at 23 and the Jazz take him, perfect. If he's not taken in the top 23 or 24 or 25, the Celtics could maybe go this direction as well, because their roster is loaded. They have the Celtics, and we'll talk about this when we get to them at 26, but the Celtics have three first round picks. They cannot possibly put all these guys on the roster unless they gotta move a lot of stuff around. So if you're Boston, you might be hoping that Balmaro drops to 26 so you can take him, stash him, bring him over when you ever want to bring him over. So, you know, they would be, at least in theory, disappointed to see him go 23rd to Utah. But, you know, this is his range, and that makes a lot of sense. With the 24th pick, 2020 NBA draft, the Milwaukee Bucks select Théo Maledon, who is a point guard from France, 6'4", just turned 19 in June. So he's young, and was also the youngest LNB All-Star in history once upon a time. And, you know, the Bucks, Eric Bledsoe still has 3 years left on a bad contract. So like he's your guy probably, you know, unless you move him for better or worse, in the immediate future. But right now the point guards on Milwaukee's roster, it's like Eric Bledsoe and George Hill. So you need youth and you need talent. And so taking a point guard here, makes some sense to me. And simply put, Maladin is he's the best available on my board at this point.
Yeah, I like it. I think he's a guy who can end up probably playing the one or the two. Struggled a little bit last season, was a little bit injury plagued, but a guy who I think has a pretty high upside, and the Bucks obviously need some backcourt help, so this makes a lot of sense. I'm going to go, by the way, thank you for taking another French point guard. I have the 27th pick with the Knicks, so I can avoid him.
Yes.
At number 25, the Oklahoma City Thunder select Alexei Pokusevski. What's the infamous Fran Fischilla line? It's 2 years away from being two years away.
Correct.
Yeah. I think Pokusevski probably falls into this category. He's 7 foot. He's a center who can pass, who can dribble, who can shoot, moves like a wing. But if you've seen this kid play, he looks so, so tiny. It doesn't look natural, but the way he moves is just a little bit different. And I think there's a chance that he goes in the first round. He's definitely a project, but this draft is, again, it's thin on stars, and it's possible that he is one of those stars in this draft down the road. And if the Thunder want to take a chance on someone who can be a star in a few years, I think Pokusevski fits a need here.
I guess the only thing I would add is that, you know, the Thunder got to figure out what they want to do. You know, are they going to keep pushing with Chris Paul, or, you know, break it up and go into a rebuild with all of these picks they got from the Paul George trade? And you could argue either side of that. You know, I think one of the interesting things about the Heat making it all the way to the NBA Finals is that they famously never tried to rebuild, or they never tanked in an attempt to rebuild. They just kept trying to get better, you know, in whatever form. And so there is a legitimate argument of, like, you don't tear it down, tank to rebuild, because there's no guarantee that works. I understand the idea behind it, but it doesn't always go the way you think it's going to go. Sometimes teams tear it down to rebuild, tank, and then you look up and 5 years later, they're still just garbage. And so, you know, that's a decision Sam Presti will have to make. Obviously, Billy Donovan already moving on, is a development, but I guess I'd say this. If you're going to keep trying to get better, maybe you do something else here. Somebody who could actually help Chris Paul next season. But if you are thinking about going into total rebuild mode, then yeah, taking a high upside international prospect, I could get down with that.
Oh, we're burning it down. We're burning it down in OKC. We're scratch. Tanking for Cade Cunningham for sure.
So what do you do with Chris Paul?
We'll see you later. We'll deal him to the Knicks. The Knicks need a point guard, right?
The Knicks do need a point guard. So, you know, that Chris Paul in New York would be interesting, and maybe he could help you set a culture there that you would like, or maybe he would drive everybody crazy. Who knows? With the 26th pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Boston Celtics select Jaden McDaniels out of Washington. As previously noted, the Celtics have three first round picks. This is the second of the three. The last one is 30th. And who knows if they're going to make all these picks? We'll see. But if they end up making these picks, 26th or 30th, like, why not just take a shot? You know, just take a shot on somebody. And Jaden McDaniels would qualify as taking a shot on somebody. He was projected by most to be a top 10 pick this time a year ago. And then he went to Washington and he was terrible. I mean, he was awful for an awful team. He was the biggest disappointment for maybe the biggest disappointment in the country. Led the Pac-12 in fouls. That's really the only thing he let him in. He was just not good. Got suspended at one point, or got benched at one point, not suspended. And, just was not good. And so I know there's some NBA people that are like, we saw him. His staff at Washington didn't like him. He didn't impress in any way. I wouldn't touch him with a first round pick. And I respect that. But if you're the Celtics and you got all these picks and you have limited roster space, if you're going to execute the picks, maybe just go, all right, it could be a total bust, but, you know, what else are we getting here anyway? Let's try to hit on a guy that a year ago people thought was a top 10 pick, and maybe we can get that out of him. Maybe it was just a bad fit at Washington as opposed to he's a bad prospect. I don't love this, but I was willing to take a shot at 26th.
Yeah, I think if you talk to people about Jaden McDaniels, they have one opinion or another about him. They either love his upside and are convinced that he's a lottery prospect, or they're totally out. Okay. This is kind of halfway in, halfway out at number 26. I'm more in the latter. I think I'm going to pass, but certainly I see the upside. I mean, he's got great size. I think he's got some interesting handles. A guy who could end up being lottery type, in terms of what he can produce long term. So yeah, this, I think this makes a lot of sense for the Celtics. All right. With the 27th pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the New York Knicks select Nico Mannion from Arizona. Obviously the Knicks have not gotten a point guard yet. They have avoided the French point guards altogether. And Mannion is a late first flyer, a super high IQ guard from Arizona who could create offense. He's a good passer. He's not super explosive. Like I said, I think he kind of underperformed at Arizona. His shooting wasn't super great, but I think the Knicks need a point guard, obviously. And, you know, whether they address that via trade or via free agency, I think Mannion's a guy who can come in and either play as a starter right away or at the very least operate as a backup. So this gives them some insurance and protection at the position.
Like, ideally, you want your point guard to be a high-level athlete, somebody who can get by other people. And Nico Mannion's probably not that.
Yeah.
But there are guys who flourish in that league because they know how to play and they can, and that covers up a lot of the physical limitations. Fred VanVleet being a great example of that in Toronto. So what you're hoping is that Nico Mannion can be one of those guys. Like, he's not going to physically overwhelm anybody. He's not going to ever be called one of the greatest athletes at his position, but he does know how to play. And, you know, I guess the G League is also filled with guys who know how to play, but can't quite do it. So we'll see. But, I'm a believer. I at one point he was projected as a lottery pick by a lot of people. I'm not saying I never subscribed to that, but after watching him at Arizona over and over again, like I wouldn't touch him in the lottery now. And I don't think anybody else would either, but late first round pick. That makes some sense, to me. Malachi Flynn is another guy who's not going to overwhelm anybody physically, but just knows how to play. If you take him in this draft, you're trusting that will translate in the same way that it translated for Fred VanVleet. So yeah, you're the Knicks. I think earlier I had him taking Sadiq Bey. You add Nico Mannion. So in a span of two drafts, they go RJ Barrett, Nico Mannion, Sadiq Bey. At least some big names. Like, we'll recognize the New York Knicks players, whether they'll ever accomplish anything in Midtown Manhattan, we'll see. But some big names from some big programs. All right. With the 28th pick, the 2020 NBA draft. As I'm doing this, I wonder if Adam Silver ever gets tired of just saying, with the 28th pick, is that like, I'm getting lazy with it now. 28th pick, draft, Laker.
That's why they sub them out at the end of the first round.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I never thought it was absolutely necessary, but as I'm doing it, I'm like, yeah, all right. I cannot do this 60 times. So bring somebody else in with the 28th pick in the 2020 NBA draft. The Los Angeles Lakers select Cassius Winston out of Michigan State. Rondo made headlines last week when it was reported that he's opting out of his contract. And so the Lakers need point guard help, whether he comes back or not. And they don't just need point guard help. Like, if I were the Lakers, I don't know that I would take Kyra Lewis, because he might take a minute to get – Cassius Winston, I think, can help an NBA team next season. He's older. He knows how to play that position. He made 43% of the 602 three-pointers he attempted in his four-year career at Michigan State. So you get me. Oh, and Tom Izzo loved him. Like, I think that means something. Like, Tom loves Cassius Winston. So comes from a strong program. Can play backup point guard minutes and maybe starter minutes. I mean, I wouldn't rule out the idea that Cassius Winston could be a starting point guard next to LeBron James, given that LeBron James is going to run most of your, he's going to initiate your offense more often than not anyway. And then, you know, Cassius Winston just slips off the ball. And now what is he? A knockdown shooter on the court with LeBron James? Like, I love this fit. I don't, I don't know that Cassius will be available at 28th. And if he is, you know, maybe the Lakers prefer somebody different. But if you talk about this, if you told me it's 2021 NBA Finals and Cassius Winston is knocking down threes next to LeBron James, that would not be surprising to me at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Lakers were one of the worst 3-point shooting teams in the NBA playoffs. To me, that's borderline inexcusable. I mean, you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, two stars who rely on the floor being space. They need shooters around them. That is essentially the recipe for how LeBron James succeeds, is with shooters around him. Danny Green didn't quite have the playoffs that people thought. Rajon Rondo is not a 3-point shooter. And even if he returns, I think it would be smart to add Cassius Winston, one of the best 3-point shooting point guards in this draft, a guy who I think for the Lakers could end up being a backup point guard, or even, you know, a guy who can start off the ball and knock down shots at a high level. So I think this is a great pick. With the 29th pick of the 2020 NBA draft, and with my final pick, I am taking Malachi Flynn from San Diego State. Just an absolute baller. Led college basketball last season in win shares. A great scorer who can make shots off the bounce at a high rate, runs an offense, knows how to defend. A guy who probably doesn't look the part as a first-round caliber prospect. But you mentioned the Fred VanVleet comparison earlier. I think that is absolutely apt. A guy who probably doesn't quite look like a first-rounder, but is going to end up just producing and winning, and he's done it at every level. I think he'll do it for the Raptors as well.
In my actual mock draft, I have the Raptors selecting Malachi Flynn as well. You know, Fred VanVleet is an unrestricted free agent, so I know Toronto would love to keep him. I don't know whether they will. So it's possible this will be an actual team need. And if it is, why not just select the guy that, you know, he doesn't actually look like, but like sort of fits the same mold of a Fred VanVleet. I mean, Fred VanVleet was awesome in college. All-American, two-time Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Year. Was on a Final Four team, led a team to a number one seed in the NCAA tournament out of the Valley. Awesome college player. Still didn't get drafted. Why? A little shorter than you want. Not quite as athletic as you want. And, you know, you put him in a combine, he's not going to test nothing. Nothing there. Except he just knows how to play. He's a winner. He's tough. And I am not predicting Malachi Flynn's going to be Fred VanVleet. Fred VanVleet's about to make $16, $18 million a year. But I think Malachi Flynn could be like Fred VanVleet in the sense that you get this long list of reasons why you think he won't make it in the NBA. And then you look up and he makes it and you go, I should have just paid attention to what he was. Because what he was I know it was just 1 year at San Diego State, but he was the biggest reason that team was way better than anybody thought it could be. Shot, you know, 37% from three this past year, shot 38% from three in a previous year. Really smart, high IQ, knows how to play, point guard, runs your team, can make a shot. Like, I like guys like that, and I like Malachi Flynn as a first round pick. And again, given the uncertainty of Fred VanVleet, future Malachi Flynn to the Raptors makes a lot of sense. With the 30th and final, thank God, final pick of the 2020 NBA draft, the Boston Celtics select Isaiah Stewart out of Washington. Now, I didn't realize this when I did it.
I was going to say, you did this on purpose, didn't you?
I didn't. I just realized it as I was scrolling through my file as we're going down the draft. And I was like, oh, I put McDaniels and Stewart on the same team. That didn't work so well last time. So I do have Isaiah Stewart and Jay McDaniels both going to the Celtics. I apologize to Danny Ainge in advance. I didn't mean to do this. I didn't know what I was doing to you when I did it. But, you know, again, the Celtics have three first round picks. Who knows if they're going to use them all. But the most obvious issue with Boston is that Daniel Tice is the starting center. You know, like, he's fine, but should he be your starting center in Boston I don't know. Like, look at the Lakers starting center. So like, maybe it doesn't matter who your starting center is anymore. But you know, Daniel Tice is the one thing in that starting lineup that doesn't fit. He's 6'8", undersized, And again, he's fine. But like, if you're trying to upgrade a Celtics position, that's probably the one where you upgrade. And Isaiah Stewart is also undersized, but he is bigger than Daniel Tice and incredible motor, incredible work ethic. Everybody loves him. Incredibly productive. A guy who we were just talking about Malachi Flynn. I think Isaiah Stewart is maybe a little bit the same. Like, you know, he is not some big shot blocking rim protecting center. He is a center and probably only a center, which is not a great thing to be in the year 2020, but super productive, seems to be all about the right things. It's the 30th pick. What else are you getting at this point? I, you know, given the way our mock draft unfolded, if you're really picking 30th in Boston, taking a center prospect might be wise. And Isaiah Stewart's the best one on the board, from my perspective at this point.
Yeah. And I would argue he, if this is how the board actually unfolded, Isaiah Stewart would end up being more productive for Boston than Jaden McDaniels would be. And he fills an obvious need for them. They can upgrade at the center position. Isaiah Stewart is super productive. Maybe not the high type of floor, prospect as Jaden McDaniels, but certainly a guy who will come in and produce right away. So yeah, love this pick.
So that is all 30 picks in the 2020, NBA draft, starting with LaMelo Ball, ending with Isaiah Stewart. And so listen, we both got mock drafts up at CBSSports.com right now. Kyle Boone handles the big board and most of our draft work. So go over there to the NBA homepage and then just, you know, find the draft page and everything you could possibly want that is draft related, is right there. Kyle Boone, thank you for doing this with me. It took a little longer than I thought it was going to take. As always, that's my fault, but I appreciate you hanging out, and I look forward to talking to you a little later on this week.
You got it. Shouts to Devin Downey, and shouts to French point guards everywhere.
And to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry, MF, and Teagle. He's a legend. Shouts to Larnell. And thank you guys for listening to the Eye on College Basketball podcast, especially the ones where we break away from the normal format and focus strictly on the NBA draft as opposed to college basketball. Kyle Boone's going to be back with me here later on this week. That will be an episode dedicated strictly to college basketball. So I believe we're scheduled to record that on Wednesday. Be looking for that on Wednesday afternoon. Till then, take care.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.